Welcome to Comic Book Keepers, where we talk about comic book characters, their history, and their impact on our lives. I'm Lance, and today we're talking about the exciting new interconnected world of the Nacelleverse. But, of course, I can't be talking about this alone, so I had to bring on a few guests. We have Brian Volkweiss, who is the founder and CEO of Nacelle Company, and the creator behind the Netflix series The Toys That Made Us, which very much plays into what we're going to be talking about today, as well as bringing back to the show Melissa Flores, who you will all know from her work on The Dead Lucky, in the Massiverse, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and the recent Spider-Gwen smash. Brian and Melissa, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
I think you also missed the description. I always think of Brian as like the Willy Wonka of the toy world.
I'll take it.
That needs to be on your business card moving forward.
Explain a great many things.
Brian, Nacelle was originally in the landscape of producing comedy specials. It was doing a lot of comedy work. And now we're at the point where you are masterminding this entire interconnected IP, toy, comic, eventually TV show universe that is the Nacelleverse. So could you tell me a little bit about the journey from where you started to where it's at now?
Yeah, but I've learned the hard way I need to say this. We are still doing stand-up. We did 27 specials last year. We'll do at least 20 to 25 this year. So now that I got that out of the way, yeah, it's pretty crazy, especially to me. But I started off, I'm trying to do about 25 years and 90 seconds. I started off as a manager. I only managed comedians. I, through that process, began producing stand-up specials. We would finance those specials, produce them, license them to Comedy Central, Showtime, HBO, about 10 years after we started. This little company called Netflix got into the game. So we just started doing all these stand-up specials, and we built this pretty big library of stand-up comedy. In the midst of that, a very lucky thing happened where the guy at Netflix, a guy named Devin, who I was doing all this stand-up comedy deals with, he was put in charge of Unscripted at Netflix. And we had become friends due to the stand-up. And he was like, hey, do you have any Unscripted shows? And I had been trying to sell Toys That Made Us at that point for 7 years. He greenlit it. We were either the first or the second Unscripted greenlight in the history of Netflix. And it went great. It got a spinoff and yada, yada, yada. About 3 years ago, I got a call from a guy I didn't know. He was like, hey, it's cool what you're doing. I bet if we work together, we could do even more cool stuff. Again, I'm trying to do a quarter of a century in 90 seconds. So I'm jumping around deliberately. I eventually said, okay. And then he was the guy. His name's Michael Goodman. He was the guy who basically was able to find these copyrights that we had a good chance of acquiring. So we acquired RoboForce, Power Lords, Garlou. That's what got the ball rolling. And we started making toys. We hired a designer, a guy that I knew. Goodman started, you know, shaking the trees and found some factories. And we put out our first toy about 2.5 years ago. It was the first two RoboForce figures. It was Wave 1. We made every mistake in the book and survived. And now we're making toys. Because we have this gigantic, people always ask me in varying degrees of subtleness, how do you pay for all of this? And the way we pay for all of this is, like I said earlier, you know, we have this massive library primarily of stand-up comedy at this point, and we're also a distributor. So we distribute it 24/7, you know, 365, and that's allowed us to finance, You know, we have RoboForce in production right now that we're doing with Dwayne, with The Rock. We have Biker Mice from Mars also in production that we're doing with Ryan Reynolds. And in the midst of all of that, I was very lucky. I had met this guy named Hunter Gorison. And then he was at Boom. Then he became the publisher at Oni. He introduced me to Melissa. We had a wild 3-hour first meeting where I kind of just vomited thoughts for about 3 hours. And Melissa took that vomit, to be gross, and turned it into an absolutely compelling, and I'm very biased, I'm aware, but I didn't write it. Melissa did, so I'm not that biased. And just turned it into this unbelievable story that is the first thing that came out of all the stuff that we're doing.
I'd like to add that he was actually very kind, because I found out later in another interview that he gave that he was quite worried when I left because I didn't ask a lot of questions. I just like, I treated it like I'm a sponge. I'm just going to like take what he says and just, you know, absorb it and then think about it. Like, here's a couple ideas. Okay, you like this direction. Okay, let me come back with it. And I was like, oh, great. He's like, he's on board. And I didn't know he was super worried until I gave him the first pitch. And then I think I felt better about it. So I appreciate the trust, because these are definitely his babies. And I'm glad I got to be let into the sandbox to play with them.
Yeah, I was waiting for the email telling me you quit. So it's very accurate.
Melissa, were you familiar with all of these properties before the pitch to write this universe?
No, I was familiar with Biker Mice from Mars, obviously, because who is it? And RoboForce a little bit. But when I first heard about it was at Comic-Con, and I had worked with Hunter a little bit when he was at Bad Idea. And those projects never ended up really manifesting, but then we both ended up at Boom. And obviously I've been writing Mighty Morphin Power Rangers for a very long time now there, about a couple of years. And then he moved to Oni. And so we had a meeting at San Diego Comic-Con, and he said, hey, here's this thing that I'm working on that's really special. And you obviously have licensed comic experience. Like, what do you think about doing something like this? And it's rare in the comic industry that you get to be the first one out of the gate to do this kind of licensed stuff and to really bring the stuff to the medium in a way that it hasn't come before. So I got really excited by that idea. Like, it's rare to be the first one to be able to touch something and like mold it and like shape it. And I like working on licensed comics. I like my own creator-owned stuff, but there's something really special, I think, about taking something that's in another medium. And especially when you get the opportunity to make it mean something, right? It's not like these comics are not canon to the Nacelleverse. Like, we're working really carefully with Brian and with Matt and with Oni to make sure that the stories we're telling fit narratively into their worlds. And that's a really special thing. You don't really get to see that in like the DC and Marvels. It's rare. It usually goes the other way around. Like, something happens in the movie, like they'll base the arc on the movie, but they'll change a lot. And then they'll like change things back to, like, you know, like Kamala is now a mutant, you know, but that happened first in the series. It's rare that that happens in comics. So it was a really cool opportunity, and I was really honored and humbled and thankful that Hunter thought of me, and that Brian, who didn't know me before that, was trusted me enough to take that meeting with me and then let me take the ball.
As soon as I heard that the Nacelleverse was happening, I then saw you, Melissa, were the one that was going to be lead writing it. And it made perfect sense to me, because you have excelled so much in taking these IPs and developing these stories, especially with Power Rangers, when you created Hyperforce and you had Hyperforce RPG, and taking things out of even what the medium it originally was for and creating something entirely new. And Hyperforce is now an extremely beloved team within the universe that did not exist before you stepped in to writing that role, which brings me to my next question, Melissa, is, are we going to get to see any new things from these properties that are from your mind or the creative collective's mind that are going to be exciting for those fans of the properties?
Well, I would say, even with something like Hyperforce, like, you know, you never create something like that on your own. You know, it's never in a vacuum. And so though I got to really, you know, I got to be the EIC on Hyperforce, you know, Hyper RPG was a big part of developing that. Malika Lim and all these beautiful people at Hyper and Hyper RPG and the characters themselves, the actors really had strong parts in RPG. So we created all that beautiful thing together, and we're kind of doing the same thing here with Nacelle. Like this is Brian's baby. Like this is Brian's world. I'm happy I get to play in it, but like every decision I make, you know, Brian has the final say and he has the opinions on it. So whenever we create something original for these worlds, it's always a conversation with Brian and with Matt. As to how they're, what they're thinking, what works for what they're looking for. And so it's a lot of question and answered. What do we need this story to do? What kind of character do we want to do? They'll offer characters to me that they're working on that are original. Sometimes I'll offer one of my own. Or if we can find an opportunity to find something in the middle, that's what we do. And I think that's the magic of something like this, is that, you know, they know the brands way more than I ever could. And so I can only do so much deep diving, you know, I can watch all the Biker Mice episodes, but I haven't lived with them like Brian and Matt have. So, so it's a nice little back and forth where, you know, they're, you know, even with issue zero, you know, Leepa was a character that came from them, and they're like, this is a character we're developing. You can have it for issue zero. And so I got to play with him. And the same thing with Garlu. Garlu is obviously one of their characters, but I got to play with Garlu and mold Garlu. Like they had an idea of what Garlu wanted to be, but I got to be the one that gave him a little bit of a voice at the very beginning. Mm. And so it's nice to have that kind of teamwork. So even though I'm technically the writer, like their hands, like their impression is all over every single page. And I think it really shows.
If I could add to that for a second, from my point of view of what Melissa just said, technically, legally and all that, yes, I have the final say. And I love when people say to me, it's up to you. I'm like, most of this is up to me. But and again, Melissa, you may disagree with me, but like, you haven't seen me give other people notes. Maybe I should send you some notes that I've sent to other people. But I mean, it from my point of view, we just kind of say a whole bunch of crap. And Melissa's the one who picked Garlu to lead us through the whole first issue. She structured everything. And maybe, you know, we were like, oh, a little bit here, a little bit there. But I mean, she figured out the structure. I pride myself, rightfully or wrongfully, who knows? But I do pride myself on writing dialogue. I love dialogue. I mean, I've given probably maybe 2% notes on dialogue. I mean, there's other writers who could be hearing this that probably want to kill me or Melissa now that I said that. But yeah, I mean, she's writing it, yes, but I would also argue leading it. And the other thing, which is kind of cool, is, you know, a lot of people, rightfully so, kind of, they're like, oh, you're retroactively building like a shared universe like Marvel. And of course, that's a very accurate statement. I get it. But it's kind of different in that we're doing it from the ground up simultaneously. So what that means is, and Melissa, if you haven't seen this yet, get ready. You know, we did a deal very recently with a major retailer, and they want a unique version of a character in the thing that we're going to be doing. So at some point, Melissa is going to get an email with a picture of mm-hmm. one of our characters that looks the same, except is a very different color. And we have some ideas because Nacelle doesn't want to just be like, hey, here's a unique version of Max 89 for this retailer. We want there to be a story connected to it. So yeah. Melissa is going to, if she hasn't received it already, is going to get an email. Here's the picture for something that's happening in October. We would like this to be an issue 2 or 3. Here's how we think we should do it. What do you think? And then she might say, I love it. Let's do what you said. Or how about this? And if it's how about this, I think there's a 98% chance we'll say, that's better than what we thought. Let's do that.
They're great. It really is fantastic to be able to work with both Matt and Brian. And Matt Kravitsky is the VP over at Nacelle. And it's especially something like this, you have to really trust the people that you're working with, and they have to trust you. And I feel like that's what we have. Like, I get along with Brian so well, and I hope he does the same with me.
Or he feels the same. I was bummed you weren't at WonderCon.
I was bummed I wasn't there too. There was a lot going on, but I ended up with a lung infection, and unfortunately my grandfather passed away. There was a lot going on.
Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't know about that. Sorry.
No, it's okay. We don't have to talk about it, but that being said, I'm happy every time I see him. Like, these meetings every time we're breaking a new IP, where it's like, okay, it's time to talk about Micromice, it's time to talk about RoboForce, it's time to talk about, like, I look forward to each and every one of those, because it's so infectious to be in the room with him and to feel his passion, because I get excited. I fall in love with the characters. Like, Garlu, again, I went looking for stuff for Garlu, and all I found was like this 50s black and white commercial where it was just, you know, here's a monster and he's like breaking things down and he's big. And I'm like, okay. But then Brian was talking about him, and he was like bringing up like Liberace and a bunch of different like references. And I'm like, okay, how do I reconcile that character with the guy I saw in the commercial? And we came to a really cool place. And that's what I really love about what we're doing, is that I'll ask him, like, in your head, because he's the king of references. Like, every time we have a conversation, he's like, have you read this comic? Have you seen this movie? Like, have you seen this guy? This is what I'm thinking. And it's such a great way for me to be able to immediately understand what he's talking about, because then we can create the character very quickly. And it comes to life very quickly, because once he gives me a reference or what he's thinking, I can go look at that. I can immediately be like, okay, I think I understand what he's talking about. And sometimes I'll go a little too dark and he'll pull me back. Sometimes I won't go dark enough and he'll push me.
I love that, by the way. It's so much harder to do the opposite.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun. And it's fun that we have the trust that he can give me a call and be like, hey, this was a little too much, but I loved what you're thinking. Like, pull it back maybe 10%. And I'm like, gotcha, I can do it. And when there's no ego involved, it's just so much better. It makes the product better. And so I'm having a blast, just having a lot of fun. Like, every single one of these properties is so different.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a Marvel property, because I love Marvel. I write for Marvel, like, nothing against Marvel, but every single world is so different. It doesn't feel like, you know, Avengers is just a superhero team and X-Men is just a different kind of superhero theme. Like, these guys, like Sektars and Biker Mice, have nothing in common aside from fighting for their home. And so that world feels rich and lived in, because every single one of them have different goals and their stakes are different. And it makes it feel like an actual universe instead of just trying to put together a superhero team. Like, we're not doing like an Avengers where you're going to have like Throttle and, you know, the Power Lords. Like, I don't know if that's ever going to be in the cards. It could be. I don't know. But it doesn't feel like the end goal. And that's what's great, because you're getting to develop each and every one of these worlds as to what they need and what those conflicts are. So like RoboForce, that miniseries looks very different than one Biker Mice is going to be. And you know, that would be very different from Power Lords. So it's really fun.
Yeah. I think that we've mentioned multiple of these properties so far, but just for our listeners that may not be aware. So within the Nacelleverse, you have RoboForce, Biker Mice from Mars, Sektars, Warriors of Simeon, Power Lords, and the Great Garlu. But then also, in that Zero issue, we also found out that you also have, is it the Cowboys of Mu Mesa?
That's right. Yeah.
Which, by the way, is an extremely, I don't know if it's hard to get, but it's like an expensive NES game as well, right? Yeah. It's like a hard one to get.
You know you're Mu Mesa.
Yeah. I was excited for this interview because I am also very much a toy person. I even watch certain YouTube channels of people that go toy hunting. So that's how I honestly found out about Sektars. I didn't know about that property beforehand. Clearly, Brian, you have so much passion for these properties, including what you mentioned before about that 3-hour pitch meeting to Melissa where she's taking in all that information. What was your relationship with these multiple properties before acquiring them?
You know, each one was different. I loved RoboForce. I would say at least 15 years ago, it could be 20. I had every single character they had made. I had all the vehicles. I had the sheets, the pillowcases. I loved RoboForce. I knew what Garlou was, but I actually didn't get one until last year at the aforementioned PowerCon. I really was not into Power Lords at all. Like, I didn't get it. I didn't like it. And it was only when I heard the rights were available and I started doing research. First of all, I'm a huge Wayne Barlow fan, and I had somehow never put two and two together that Barlow had designed all of them. So that was brand new. Biker Mice, I was familiar with, but not as much as you would maybe think compared to other people, because this is something I've learned going back to Toys That Made Us. We as Americans have this zone where it's like the last 2 years of high school and the first 2 years of college, like whatever you were into and whatever you will be into, it kind of gets suspended for those 4 years. Mm. And Biker Mice came out right when I was wrapping up high school and getting into college. So I came to that party actually pretty late. Sectors, I've always loved. They're crazy. Like, I remember as a kid just being like, these are nuts. I got to get these. And they were actually huge compared to almost every other toy. But on a related note, for me at least, something that I think is super interesting about this whole process, again, comparing us to Marvel in how it's different, RoboForce, right or wrong, in my opinion, we can do whatever the hell we want. They made one episode that like nobody saw outside of like England and Germany. It's awful. they really never did anything else. And we just basically started from scratch and came up with the idea based on what really happened to RoboForce, which is they were overshadowed by Transformers and it literally bankrupted the company that made them. But then Biker Mice, on the other hand, I mean, we're really reverential to the IP and we take very, very seriously. So like with Melissa, when we're dealing with RoboForce, she never hears us say, well, the RoboForce, blah, blah. Like, it's always like, yeah, whatever. With Biker Mice, like, we check everything. Not about the 2006 one. We're kind of acting like that never happened. But we're treating the original cartoon and the toys with we are reverential to the original. But then Garlou, as Melissa mentioned, when we were making RoboForce, the cartoon, which we're still making, everything was to a certain degree serious. And I just wanted to have a character because, as you know, comedy is in our blood. It's the origin. It's the foundation of the company. So I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason. I don't remember anymore what it is. But I was like, yeah, maybe Garlou is the Liberace of 2189. And that's 2089. And that's literally what happened. So all throughout season one of RoboForce, you're seeing billboards everywhere, posters in bathrooms for the great Garlou, who's basically the Liberace of the universe. But that's all we knew. Melissa, we gave her all the scripts to the first 6 episodes. We gave her the rough cut of the first couple episodes. And she was the one who came up with everything else. And so Melissa's being very kind, saying Matt and I are doing X, Y, and Z. And to a certain degree, it's true. But from my point of view, something that's super interesting about the process is what is your baby like becomes everybody's baby. So it's like it's now Melissa's baby. Cartoon Conrad is the studio we're working with on RoboForce and Biker Mice. Dwayne Johnson, Ryan Reynolds, their teams, they have notes. So it really is becoming, like, I don't know if you're familiar with this expression or not. Have you ever heard this term, mother dough?
No.
Mother dough, it's a pizza thing. It could be other things too, but the premise of mother dough is like there's a pizza place, it opens, you know, at the end of the day, there's dough left over and they save it. The next day, they make more dough, but they combine it. So at the end of the day, whatever's left, then the next day they make more. So you could argue a pizza place that's been open for 70 years, to a certain degree, they're still using the same dough. Mm. By the way, now you know what Melissa has to listen to when we talk, this kind of crap.
Isn't it cool though? Don't you want to listen forever?
It's pretty amazing, honestly. I'm learning a lot of facts I'm using on other people later.
Mother dough. But that's how I look at it. It's like we're just putting this whole thing together, and it seems to be working.
Very much so.
And obviously, you know, none of this happens without the artists, you know, so the incredible artists that, like, the RoboForce, their designs are so intricate and, like, so, like, it's, you can't really stylize the RoboForce robots, you know. And so I just was, like, just looking at the proof for issue one, and I was just so impressed with the artists, because these are big, intricate, like, machines, and the way they managed to humanize them and, like, give them the body language and the nuance that you need for a comic book is really impressive. Like, none of this happens without the artists and the letterers, like, creating the mood that we need. And right. And so that's always, like, really cool. And I just, like, I don't think they get the love that they should, especially for a project like this.
Agreed.
Yeah. So we mentioned before, Nacelleverse issue 0 is out now. All listeners, you can go out to your comic shops and pick this up. And it is the beginnings of this universe. So within the story, you get to see the great Garlou go through these various adventures to try and find his new home while encountering RoboForce and Biker Mice from Mars and Sectars and Power Lords, and how each of those various teams and groups are affecting Garlou, as well as their place in the world that is becoming the Nacelleverse. And then that's going to lead into the various issues that are going to be coming out specifically for each property. So we have, because I have my issue right here, RoboForce 1 is going to be on sale this month, April 2024. Yeah. It's going to be unsourced. I think it drops on the 16th, right?
I think so. I have to look myself. Yeah. I live in a completely different calendar. I live in the script delivery calendar, so I get that confused quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm 99.9% sure, because I looked it up beforehand, but it should be in stores on the 16th. But Melissa, because you are creating this, or along with the creative team, like you've mentioned, putting all of this together, how was your approach to writing Nacelleverse 0, as well as moving forward with those other properties, those solo series? What's your tax strategy as far as developing it versus how you normally go about writing your stories for other IPs as well as your own creator-owned work?
You know, it was challenging, I'm not going to lie, because to Brian's point, there's some of it that is completely undeveloped. RoboForce, you know, they have a whole animated series. They have the scripts already. They have cuts. Like, I could look at it and I'd be like, I get it. I understand I know who these characters are. I knew, you know, it was enough detail for me to be able to find the holes that I wanted to try and, like, sit in and like find those places. But something like Power Lords or Sectars, there's not that much out there yet. And so really it became about me just, like, deep diving into what I could find and finding what I thought was compelling for both Garlou and for us. So, like, what's different about each of these worlds and where they are? And I didn't want to do anything that was going to step on the toes of whatever, of the animated series, whatever they're going to do for that. And I don't want to spoil that. That's obviously Brian's thing. But I wanted to look at, you know, the perspective from Garlou, a guy that's just lost his home, who's looking for a place that, you know, he's, you know, the three Goldilocks. You know, he's like, you know, this planet's too mean, this planet's too dry. Like, he's looking for a place that he can call his own, but he's also a very naive character. And what I found what I find compelling in each of these worlds is what you're going to find in these little eight pages of story. You know, so with RoboForce, you know, I love this idea that they were created for an incredible purpose and they just literally programmed for it and just have never gotten to fulfill it. Like, it reminds me of, and this is like a very like comedic thing, but that Rick and Morty episode with the Meeseeks.
Yes.
You know, where they're created to fulfill a purpose, and with Jerry, they're not able to fulfill that purpose. So it's a comedy. So they obviously go insane and like try to kill Jerry because they can't fulfill their purpose. But I mean, it's that kind of frustration that I would feel in these guys. And so I wanted, but they also live in a world that they more than anybody would be super accepting of someone like Garlu, because Garlu is also displaced. And very much that they're displaced in their own world. They were created for a world that doesn't need them. And Garlu has a world that doesn't exist. So it made sense that he ends up there. The biker mice, again, we're very sacred to the biker mice, but there's a lot of plot you can have because we don't see them on Mars very often. So the opportunity to see what that world was like before the war for Mars is something that's interesting and cool, and they're just so much fun. So we got to like give Garlu a little bit of a respite despite everything there, because they also have the humanity that they're in a place to give him grace in a way that maybe the other guys aren't. And so there's like one of my favorite scenes is Carbine, who's one of my favorite characters in Biker Mice. He's sitting where after at the end of all of this, Garlu realize he's never really grieved. He's never had the opportunity to grieve. And she gives him that opportunity. She's like, go ahead and cry, let it out. I'm going to find you a new home. And so I felt like that was a place that could only take place in Biker Mice, because these guys have such huge hearts despite all the circumstances around them. And that kind of optimism and love that they have, that's what he would need at that particular time. Then you go to the Sektars and the Power Lords. Like the Power Lords, they are probably the most chaotic of all of them. Because if you look at Adam Power, he's crazy. Like that is like those aliens, all that's insane to me. Like I love it. It's so weird and cool. And it's almost kind of like they don't have time for Garlu. So Garlu has to like, it ends up being Garlu helps them. Right. They're kind of involved in their own thing because there's so much going on for them. They have all these crazy aliens. And so you kind of see like the steps of Garlu's like grief in each one of these things, where, you know, when he helps the Power Lords, he's not thinking about himself. And then he goes over to the Sektars and you have, you know, what would be a beautiful planet, but it's like getting set up for civil war, where you have, he's starting to understand that maybe he's not okay. And then by the time you get to the Biker Mice is when he finally realizes he's not okay. And so when he finally gets to Earth, he's accepted that he's not going to be okay. And so you kind of use each one of these guys as a little bit of a journey, but you also provide a glimpse into what their worlds looks like and what that conflict is that we can later pick up in those miniseries. That was a very long-winded way of going there, but I hope that it like kind of got the answer you were looking for.
No, absolutely. I think it's really important to understand your thought process behind what he's doing on each one of these planets and how those interactions are not only affecting Garlu, but then are affecting the other characters. Because is it so Power Lords, the his partner in that one, is it Soraya?
Shia.
Yeah. And Shia's immediate response to grab Garlu and be like, no one's going to be on this planet for a vacation. What are you doing here? That was pretty funny. And I mentioned this to Melissa before we started recording, was that reading Nacelleverse Zero felt like someone had taken their favorite toys and were doing what we all do as kids and having them cross over and interact with one another and develop the story in our head. Right. And that joy came through so strongly that I'm just reading it, having a blast, thinking of all the times that I played with my toys and had the crossovers between all the different properties and IPs. And I think that's something that a lot of readers are going to enjoy, to have that nostalgia of, I remember this feeling when I would play with my toys, and now we get to read about it in this entirely new world.
You know, it's funny. Making cartoons is, until RoboForce, all I've ever done is unscripted and scripted. I've never done animation. So it's a very odd process, very time consuming, and compared to everything I'd ever done before, backwards. So you have a script, and then you get storyboards, and then you got to design everything, every pen, every desk, everything. Every day you're getting 10 to 50 drawings you give notes on. So we knew from day one there was going to be a cameo for the biker mice in RoboForce season one. So it was in the script. I knew it was coming. It was, you know, one of my quote unquote mandates. So like I knew everything. But then one day, maybe 6 or 7 months after we started, we got the cut. And it was all like hand drawn. There was no color. It was rough. But for the first time, I saw Throttle, Moto, and Vinny interacting with Max 89 and 100 and Sentinel and Soda. And I'm not going to lie, I teared up because we had been talking about this for a year, but that was the first time where it was like, oh, we're doing this.
I'm sure that was an incredible experience to be able to actually see everything come together like that.
Yeah, it was nuts.
And along those lines, I'm curious. So we have, like you mentioned, the two shows so far. So RoboForce, which has Dwayne Johnson on it to produce. And then Biker Mice from Mars has Ryan Reynolds on to produce from his team. How did that come about? Was it reaching out to individuals who are interested in these properties? Or did it go the other way around? They're like, oh, you have this property. I'm interested in this property.
Well, I mean, this definitely falls into the category of it's not what you know, it's who you know. So we were already working with Dwayne and Ryan Reynolds on other things. We do the show on Disney Plus with Dwayne called Behind the Attraction. So with RoboForce, it was we basically have a call every month between Nacelle and $7, Dwayne's company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, guys, I got the greatest thing. We got to do it. RoboForce. And that's how that happened. Biker Mice was the opposite. Ryan is a huge motorcycle guy. There's people on his team that are into motorcycles as well. And one of the people on the team in particular was very familiar with RoboForce. When the press release came out, with Biker Mice, when the press release came out, forwarded it to Ryan and was like, hey, do you like this? And Ryan was like, oh my God, I love this. I forgot all about this. This was like my jam. I don't know if that's what he said, but in my mind, that's what he said.
I think that was verbatim.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
And then my phone rang and yeah, then we were working with Ryan Reynolds on Biker Mice.
That's amazing. I love that so much. Along those same lines of being able to play with your favorite toys. So with Nacelleverse, really feeling like a kid is playing in their own mind with all of their favorite toys crossing over. I want to hear from both of you. What was your go-to lineup of toys from various properties that you would create these stories in your mind? Because I have mine.
I was a girl, so I was given a lot of Barbies. But I never liked to play with my sisters because they always wanted to have pool parties. So I was not interested in pool parties. I wanted to find and go on adventures. So I would have my Ken and my Barbie go on adventures with the He-Man and Voltron and the Thundercats.
Love it.
And I had a stuffed lion that was usually the monster that they would fight.
That's perfect, because I was also going to ask, what's the larger toy that goes along with your figures that would be playing together? So that's great. How about you, Brian? What would your go-to?
It was two categories. The first easy one was Lego. I mean, I'm a lifelong Trekkie, and they're really, for all extent and purposes, were no Star Trek toys when I was little. So, like, I built the bridge out of Legos. I built the Enterprise out of Legos. So Legos is always, to me at least, it's its own category to this day. Other than that, it was G.I. Joe, Star Wars, and Transformers. And they all worked and played together. And the Lowlight and Flint and Scarlet were helping take down Unicron. So it was a team effort of those lines.
Well, you must be living your best life right now with the Energon universe going on right now. So G.I. Joe and Transformers having fun together.
It literally doesn't make sense this is happening. Yeah.
It's incredible. Those comics are incredible. It's a great time to be alive right now. Lots of fun things crossing over with each other. That's what was so exciting about this was the fact that there's so much love for these properties. And so I'm sure there are plenty of people that are very excited to see the Cellverse come to fruition, as well as all the exciting things that are coming forward, like the individual comic series that Melissa is going to be writing. So we have RoboForce, which is going to be out in April, May, and June for those three issues. We have Biker Mice from Mars, 1, 2, and 3 coming July, August, and September. Then Sectars in October, November, and December. And then finishing up is Power Lords 1, 2, and 3 in January, February, and March of 2025. Melissa, you're very busy for the next very long time.
You know, that's how I like it.
It beats the alternative.
Yeah.
Is there anything we haven't touched on yet for the Nacelleverse that you're wanting to bring up or mention?
You know, it's you really hit the, you used the word I would have used. We're trying to spread joy. And as cheesy and cliched as that sounds, I mean, everything we do, not just with the Nacelleverse, I mean, with the documentaries we make and everything, I mean, it's everything is designed that you feel better about yourself, you feel better about the world you live in, you're inspired to maybe write something, or from a song to a poem to a script, whatever. We just want to entertain and really just have fun. You know, we want to make people laugh, we want to make, when appropriate, people cry. And I want to, you know, it's funny, by the way, it's so funny doing interviews with Melissa. Because, you know, very often stuff comes up that, like, we haven't talked about before. And, you know, one of the things you said earlier, Melissa, you know, about, you know, Garlou getting to all these planets. One of the things that, if you think about it, is, and you can even see this in Nacelleverse Zero to a certain extent, the reoccurring theme for every single thing we're doing as individual worlds and characters, but then the whole Nacelleverse as a whole is redemption. It's all about redemption. My two favorite Star Wars characters are Jedi Luke and Ahsoka Tano, which I hate to say this, but almost the same character, which is probably the reason why I love them so much, but they're both redemption stories. My favorite moment in all of Star Wars is when Luke is about to kill Vader, and then he sees Vader's cut off hand with the wires, looks at his own hand, and that his own robot hand, and then throws away the lightsaber. That's my favorite moment in all of Star Wars. Some of the most I've ever cried in my life is in Fury Road, when Furiosa, at the end, when Mad Max says to her, "Why are you doing this?" She's like, "Redemption." So if you look at the Nacelleverse through that lens, especially RoboForce, by the way, I mean, it's the most unsubtle thing in the world with RoboForce. It's literally about redemption. And who over 10 years old cannot relate to wanting to be redeemed for something, if not lots of somethings?
Very, very fitting. And I think that this is going to be a very exciting time for comic fans, but also fans of this property. So everyone go out and pick up those Nacelleverse issues, because you're going to get exactly what Brian just talked about. This is a series that knows what it is. Reading Nacelleverse Zero, I could tell that it wasn't going like Melissa, you mentioned earlier that you're getting those notes back about reining it in just a little bit. And you feel that, but the comic knows what it is. And I was just having fun reading it. It didn't have to go super dark in order to just kind of like grasp my attention, keep me there and want me to spend more time in this world. And that's exactly what this comic does. And I'm excited to read the other issues that are going to be coming out from it.
Thank you.
You're going to find, like, I don't think we touched on it enough, that the really thing that's really special about the comics and the series is that they tie together. Like you enrich the experience when you consume both of them. I think you can consume one of them and be fine, but when you get both of them, there's validation, I think, and reward for fans that do, because you're going to find information in the miniseries that are significant for the series itself. And I think that's really special. And I'm really thankful that I was able to contribute in that way to the lore of each of these universes.
That's an understatement, but accurate.
Well, I just want to thank you again both so much for taking the time to meet with me and talk, because I was excited about this. I'm very excited to see where everything goes.
Thank you.
It's time to close the book on the Nacelleverse. So until next time, this is Lance.
And Melissa.
And Brian.
Reminding you to keep your friends close,
but your comic books and toys closer.